Behold the voice of God.
For those of you who don't know me officially, my name is Amanda Waller.
And I am Aaron Mosh, host of Task Force X.
What, we some kind of suicide squad?
Well, yeah, that and...
Checkmate.
Task Force X is a podcast that tells the stories of John Ostrander's Suicide Squad and Paul Kupperberg's Checkmate from the late 80s, early 90s.
I want to build a team of some bad people who can do some good.
And that's what Suicide Squad is. While Checkmate is a team of good people doing some good, my mission here is to chronicle each and every title in all the books that Suicide Squad and Checkmate appeared in during that era.
We're the U.S. government. You're going to start a blog and expose us?
Well, a blog and a headcast, Amanda.
Those scumbags are trying to screw me.
Not at all, Amanda. Just trying to help everyone else discover the joy of the Suicide Squad and Checkmate. Anywho, hope you guys have as much fun with these comics as I did when I first read them. Oh, so many years ago.
Mother...
That's enough of that, Amanda. Let's go and start the show.
I didn't believe the stories.
Nobody does.
Remember, I'm watching.
I see everything.
Welcome back to the third part of The Janus Directive. This month out, we're going to look at parts 5 and 6, Checkmate number 17, and Manhunter number 14. Let's go and start the show. Janus Directive, an 11-part adventure from DC Comics, starring Checkmate, Suicide Squad, Captain Atom, Project Peacemaker, The Manhunter, Firestorm, plus several others. Part 5 of the Janus Directive takes place in Checkmate number 17. That came out June of 1989, but on sale date was April the 11th of 1989. Cover price was $1.50. The title of this story is called A Hard Day's Night. Written, as usual, by our buddy Paul Kupperberg. Penciler, Steve Irwin. Inker, Al Vey. Letterer, Todd Klein. Colorist, Juliana Freder. The cover was done by Gil Kane. And this book was edited by Jonathan Peterson. And this was reprinted in Suicide Squad, The Janus Directive, trade paperback, which came out in 2016. And from Mike's Amazing World of Comics, the synopsis, and that's also where I got the cover, the credit information. Mike says about this issue, while Checkmate reels from the loss of its headquarters, which is destroyed during the fight with Major Force, Cobra's ninja assassins strike down Checkmate field agents around the globe. Sensing he has been set up, Harry Stein reaches out to General Ealing to form an alliance with the Atom Project. He suggests that key individuals from both organizations have been replaced by doppelgangers, including Amanda Waller. Meanwhile, Peacemaker tries to track down Major Force. He encounters Blackthorn and Knight John Reed before being attacked by Cobra's assassins. And as usual, we're going to take a look at this issue. We'll start where we normally start, with the cover. On the left-hand side, we have our trade just we've been having, the Janus Directive, Part 5 of 11. It has number 5 on the top. It says Checkmate. Peacemaker goes wild. The image itself shows Peacemaker. Behind him, we have Blackthorn and a Checkmate Knight fighting a bunch of ninjas. Peacemaker's got one up over his head. He's firing his gun one hand. Very action-packed, 90s action movie-oriented style. Blackthorn's in the background with a sword fighting some ninjas. The Knight's got his staff out fighting ninjas. And again, we got a ninja here in the front looking back like he's calling us for reinforcements. And this is a Gil Kane cover. You can, if I didn't tell you that, looking at this cover, you could tell that. Nothing bad. Again, I like Gil Kane. I like what he's done, his work. I liked him on the Atom. But it is a Gil Kane cover. You can look at this ninja that's facing us, his eyes. I don't know if I mentioned this before, but Gil Kane's eyes and around the eyes have a certain look that you can kind of pinpoint. Hey, that's Gil Kane drawing right there. I like it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying nothing bad about it. But yeah, Gil Kane's got this distinctive style. We start the story itself. We get our Checkmate Knight. I'm sure you're getting tired of hearing this. I say this, I'm sure, almost every episode, but I love the design of the Knight. We get Knight. He's got a gun in his hand. He's got a vest on. The vest, it's brown, just... like a ammo vest or something, I guess. I don't know the proper word for it. He's got a bunch of pouches. Again, we're going to the We're getting ready to go to the 90s, so the start of the pouches. But again, he's looking around the Florida Everglades. We get in just hacking him. The next couple pages, I guess just the next page, is a fight scene. There's 2, 4, 6, 8, 9. There's at least 9. Let me see. I'm just counting here. 2, 4, 6, 8, 9. Yeah, there's 9 ninjas that I can see attacking this one knight. And they finally take him down. We see blood all over, but a couple of ninjas. We see at least 3 that's down and 1 that's injured. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1 missing, so that's probably 4 down. Again, a checkmate knight took out 4 ninjas before they finally got him down. And unfortunately, we don't know who this knight is. We'll never know because, well, he dies here. Again, the Cobra ninjas have taken him out. And they take their wounded brother and leave him as checkmate, as the Rook Control is trying to contact the checkmate knights, probably to warn him about the danger that's a little too late. Though, again, I like this here on page 2. Like I say, we get this one knight fighting 9 ninjas. And just to show how badass the checkmate knights are, you know, he's taking out several ninjas before they finally, again, overwhelm him and take him out. Because there's only so much even one knight can do. But again, these knights are trained the best. They're very great. Very great? They're great fighters for the most part. But again, 9 against 1. Yeah, the odds were a little against him. And then we cut to this little shack on the edge of a beach. I wouldn't mind living there. It's got some palm trees. Very nice looking beach. And then we get the Rook. And again, I'm not sure this guy is offhand. I'm assuming he's one of the Rook's down. But it's been 12 hours since the night last checked in. Talking with a guy and this blonde, cute girl. And they're saying that's how, you know, they're being hit, and he fears that checkmate will never be the same again. And I like the transition here. He's, you know, this guy saying, I fear checkmate will never be the same again. And we cut to Shelby, Virginia, where the remains of Koning Industries, which was checkmate headquarters, I said was because it's demolished. We saw that at the end of last issue. Actually, it was the Suicide Squad issue. We saw it being destroyed. Get news helicopters. We got G News, which I'm assuming is GWS. GBS. Get the military. Again, this here's on page 3 and 4. It's a nice splash page. Showing the destruction of Koning Industries. And again, we get a military guy out here. Why, they were doing some work for us, but that could be related, but we're not quite sure what's going on. We're still looking into it. And yeah, it's a general that's talking. And we get Lois Lane front and center. Get real, general. There's more going on here than some piddling industrial espionage. Doesn't the real reason involve a war between agencies and the intelligence community? I'm afraid I don't understand, Ms. Lane. How would such a war, if one ever existed, be tied into the destruction of an electronics company? Now, if you'll excuse me. And the other reporters start hounding Lois, you know, hey, it sounds like you know something, won't you, you know, give us a break. She's again, this classic Lois, she's like, sorry, this is a Daily Planet exclusive. You want the poop, you're going to have to dig it for yourself. And again, she's beloved because she doesn't really know what's going on, but she does know there's something going on because she's all in Checkmate 26. And again, as I've said before, I love the, they got the little editor's note here telling us, you know, what issues to look at if you want to go more into it. I've talked about this before. I'm complaining about it again. I mean, for a while, they got rid of these little editor notes. Now they're kind of back, but they're kind of referring you to trade paperbacks, storylines instead of actual issues. I like when they refer you to an actual issue. That way you can pick up the actual issues because I'm a big fan of the floppies, the monthlies, whatever you want to call them, the individual issues. I do have some trades. I have the trade of this one, in fact. But I also have the individual issues. So, I don't know. I mixed feelings on that. But I do like when they refer to an actual issue. And we get Lois. She's sitting there saying how she's going to keep looking into this until she finds out what's going on. Here at the bottom of page 6, it looks like. I don't care much for her face. 3, yeah, oops. I don't know what it is, but something about her face just seems a little off here. It doesn't quite seem Lois Lane-ish to me. I don't know what it is. Oh, yeah, Kozel Booger face, and she looks a little older, a little... I don't know. I just saw her face here. The rest of the panels look great. Just this one panel here, not so great. But then she's talking about how she's going to keep plugging on. She's going to find out what's going on. And we cut somewhere in the Colorado Rocky Mountains. We find the Checkmate Knights working out. We get Harry and Harvey here talking about what's going on. Again, we get Harvey classic, his jacket and his little hat he wears. Again, here on page 7, the hat doesn't look like it's quite drawn on his head properly. Just a minor nitpick. I love the art in this, as I've always said. I love the writing. So, again, I'm a 48-year-old geek looking at a 30-year-old comic. I'm going to have some nitpicks, and that's just really just a nitpick. Moving on, story-wise, we got a Checkmate Knight in Johannesburg of South Africa fighting a handful of these soldiers. And as he's fighting them off, again, we get 2, 4, 6, 8, at least 8 ninjas I can count coming down fighting him. Well, I guess there's 2, 4, 6. There's 7 ninjas. 6 come down fighting him, 1 staying up on the top with a crossbow. And as the knight's busy fighting these 6 ninjas, he shoots an arrow right into his visor mask. Again, 1 knight against 6 ninjas. Shows you how badass they are. And the only way they defeated him was, again, just a stealth attack. And again, I do like here on page 9 at the top. They shoot him with the arrow. We see the arrow going into his mask. Blood comes splurting out. And then they take off. We see 4 of them leaving. As the knight lays there, blood's coming out of his mask, an arrow sticking in his head. It's just a great panel. I think this is some fantastic artwork. I've said it before. I've been saying it all along. I think Steve Irwin does a fantastic job on this book. And Alve and Juliana Fredder, I usually don't mention the inker and the colorist, but they all just do a fantastic job on this book. I love the visuals on here. I love Paul Kupferberg's writing. It was just fantastic. And then we get to a space station, I guess, miles above Earth. And I guess these ninjas are called the Black Adders. Black Adders. And they work for Cobra. This is Cobra the K, not Cobra from G.I. Joe. But again, we get Cobra, talking to the 2 agents from, I think it was last issue. We find out their name is Mr. and Mrs. Chase. In case you don't know, if I'm not mistaken, this is Danny Chase's parents. Danny Chase was a major character, I guess, over in the Teen Titans book. A lot of people didn't care for Danny Chase. He was a bit of a jerk, but he was okay. We'll get into that some other point. Maybe I'll talk about the Teen Titans at some point in my life. I don't know when yet. I do talk about it briefly over my Head Speaks podcast. I re-released the Titans, New Titans Annual as part of the Armory in 2001. Danny Chase wasn't a part of that at this point. He was dead, in quotes. But, again, this is Mr. and Mrs. Chase. That's where I was going with this. It's his parents. And we get Cobra sitting there talking. He's like, even now, my Janus Directive tears. Tears the intelligent beauty asunder. It was simplicity itself to set them at one another's throats. Again, he's living up to that Cobra moniker very, very much so. He drags out the S's. He's a snake-themed villain, so he has to. I think it's under contract. Cobra Commander do that once in a while. Most of your snake-themed characters, they like to drag out the S's when they talk. It's under their contract, I think. Anyways. And then we get... we're cut to New Orleans, Louisiana. We get this, you know, gal knocking on the door saying, hi, my name's Sheila Summers. I'm a representative of United Casualty and Life Insurance. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't need any insurance. And so he shuts the door, let her in, and also she kicks it open. We find out it's Val Vostok, the gal's been hanging out with Blackthorn and the Knights. And hey, look who comes to the door behind her. Actually, knocks. Actually, takes the guy down. We get Blackthorn and the Knight come walking in. And again, this guy does computer work for Belrev's prison, and they want him to break them in. And again, here on page 11, is there coercing him, in quotes, to break into Belrev's computers. We see some of these black adders getting ready to come and attack him. And again, here on page 12 and 13 and the top of 14, we get a little fight. We get a handful of black adders fighting Val and the Knight and Blackthorn, and these guys are way over their head. If one Knight can fight 6 to 8 ninjas, a Knight, Blackthorn, and Val can definitely take out this small handful of sin against them. And I like how they're fighting. The Knight's like, "You okay, Val? Duh, I have been worse thoughts during..." Sorry, try that again. She says, "Duh, I have been worse spots during my tenure with the Doom Patrol." Because as I mentioned, she used to be a negative woman in the Doom Patrol when it was written by... Who was that? Oh, yeah. Paul Kupferberg. So I like how the writers... again, Paul Kupferberg was on Vigilante at the end. He brought those characters over here. He wrote Doom Patrol when it ended his run on there. He brought Val into this book. So I like how these writers reuse of these characters. And so they're fighting. I say, so Val's like, "I've been worse spots during my time with Doom Patrol." Blackthorn, she's all bloody all over her face. She's got blood splashers. She's like, "Quit bragging, honey. Let's move this melee outside where there's more room for us to maneuver." And so they go outside here, bottom page 13, they're still fighting the ninjas. And again, we get one up above them watching as the trio finishes off the black adders. And then we go back above Earth where we get the Cobra space station, I guess it's called. And they activate their cloaking device. And here on page 14, we get I like these panels laid out. The top of the page, top panel shows the Knight, like I mentioned, and Blackthorn and Val finishing off these ninjas, these black adders. And below that, the rest of the page, one half, you know, it says high above the Earth. We got a picture of the Earth with the Cobra station there. And they're saying the cloaking device is Ray Lord Naganaga. And that's the name. Cobra's organization. The commander is Lord Naganaga. How can I forget that? And Naganaga is saying, "On my command then, lackey." And then we get a guy from Earth monitoring things. He's like, "Sir, pick up a UFO." And then we get Naganaga saying, "Activate it." And we see the shuttle or whatever it is in a red. I'm going to call it Surprint. And I picked that up from the Who's Who's podcast. And so they activate it. And it goes into a red Surprint. And then we get back on Earth, and we get the soldier. It's gone, sir. Probably just a glitch. Don't worry, I'm sure it's nothing to worry about. As we see Lord Naganaga just sitting there looking straight ahead. It's nice little panel there. I like the way it's laid out. And then we got to the People's Republic of Karak, where we get another Knight. He's waiting for a terrorist organization. Let me see real quick. He's waiting to catch a man contacting a terrorist organization. And as he's waiting, we get four Knights come up behind him. He pops his gun out, that little holster on his wrist I really love. And then one of them, as he's fighting these three ninjas, one of them throws a throwing star right into his neck. Apparently the neck area is not very well protected, and a throwing star got through to it. So again, these black adders are wiping out the Checkmate Knights in rather quick succession. And here on the next page, page 16, we get General Ealing and Harry Stein having a little talk, basically talking about the last few issues, how Ealing doesn't trust Stein after what happened with the Project Checkmate stuff. We get some, again, Jonathan Peterson, the editor, gives us some notes, you know, Suicide Squad 28, Suicide Squad 27. And again, we get some dialogue here how Harry's saying that people's been acting out of character. People are acting like they should. Amanda Waller, she's always been contrary and arbitrary. But the way she's been acting since the start of Borderline Insanity, and he thinks she's in on it. And again, we find out here he's talking that he thinks that these are doppelgangers. He thinks that the people that were killed, that Babylon who was killed, may have been a doppelganger. Amanda's a doppelganger. And I do hear on the bottom of page 17, Harry's like, well, we need to work together on this. We're going to, I'll go down. And Ealing's like, I'm warning you, Stein. You cross me and I'll kill you. You got that? And Harry's like, fair enough. You don't care to shake on it. Buddy, you can kiss my... And we got somewhere in the Dijon district of France, we get this blonde knight. Blonde? Sorry, this redheaded knight. Seeing a trailer, a couple of, pawns or rooks, wherever they are. And yeah, she's, from what we can see, she's kind of a cutie. But unfortunately, we'll get to know her very well because outside of her truck, we see a couple black adders. And apparently, their truck's broke down. One of the guys sitting, got the truck pulled up, the hood open, working on it. The black adders throw some explosive. Let me see, what is it? Okay, shoots an arrow. A flaming arrow into the gas tank, which causes the truck blow up. We're never going to see this hot redhead again, so let's quickly move on from there. Then we cut over to Peacemaker. Peacemaker's attacking an empty building. He finds out it's empty. He tapped into Checkmate's computers and learned that Major Force was working for General Ealing, and this was the General's last known safe house. Again, a little reference to Checkmate 16. Again, I love these little references to previous issues. Peacemaker, I didn't read any of Peacemaker stuff from the Charlton days. I first discovered him here in the early 90s, late 80s, when he started showing up in DC. I read it. He had like a 4-issue miniseries I read. He appeared in Captain Atom, if I'm not mistaken, and he appeared mainly here in, here in Checkmate, and this is where I really knew him from. Was his appearances here, his 4-issue miniseries, and maybe it was Captain Atom or somewhere he appeared, because I did read some other issues with him in it. But anyways, Peacemaker lands in this warehouse where he thinks he's going to be General Ealing. Out comes Blackthorn and the Knights, and basically they have a little parley where they want to talk, they're trying to get him on their side and work with them. And just before all the shit is about to hit the fan, they get attacked by the Black Adders. And then we get a couple more pages of fight. Like here on page 23, as they're fighting, the top of it, we get the, this is kind of from the cover. We get the knight with his staff fighting off a handful of ninjas. We get Blackthorn with her sword fighting off some ninjas. And then we get, next, this is from the cover, we get Peacemaker picking up one of the Black Adders. His gun in his other hand is firing away. Keep coming, fools, and die! Blackthorn's like, stop encouraging Peacemaker. In case you haven't noticed, the gun's outnumbered in a big way. And Peacemaker tells him, hold on to my arms and hold on tight. And he blasts them out of there to their helicopter. And he has his helicopters blow that building up here on the bottom of page 24. They land on the pier. The building blows up, and the knight's like, Godfrey, you sure don't believe in half measures, do you, man? No. And Blackthorn's like, oh, this guy scares even me, Reed. But you got to hand it to him. He sure gets the job done. Here it ends with just Peacemaker's hand on his hips, looking at the village, laughing. It's just great. And it says Janjack continues with Manhunter 14, Firestorm 86, and Suicide Squad 29. Let you know where to go next. Again, another great issue. I love the artwork. I'm loving the storyline. It's been a while since I've reread the story, but I'm liking what I'm seeing so far. Again, from rereading this. But that's all I really got to say about this issue. This issue and the next issue actually marks the halfway point of the storyline. Next issue, instead of Suicide Squad, we're going over to Manhunter number 14. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Let's go play some promo break, some promos from some friends of the network. And we'll be right back with Manhunter number 14.
We'll be back with much more fun. Now don't you change that channel, son.
Aqua Rob, Fio Shag, Lady Viper's quite the hag, Batman Jones, Lady Cop, Satin Satan smoking hot, The Fortress of Solitude, Master Villain's Attitude, Nubia, Steampunk, Kid Lantern's made up, Bouncer does deflect, Astrolad to pass projects, Golden Age, Firestorm, Fireman, Feral. Wonder Woman, Superman, before the crisis began, Cal Durham, Domino, Professor Zoom, self-cameo, Super Duper, Topo Quisp, Earth 2 Aquaman exists, bonus page of Anti-Lad, has a phallus for a head, Superwoman and Loki, the Crusader slipped and died, Human Squid, Flying Fish, Tira Sadie, Whiz Kids, Woozy Winks is so rotund, while I Ching's speech is quite profound, a bandit name, Breakaway, so much more I have to say.
GDC had started with Who's Who, Zoom you can Nori's addendum has built such momentum. He had to start the Zoom Zoo. And the Earth One's long gone, the entries still go on and on and on and on and on.
Zoom's Who. Zoom Yukinori's addendum to the definitive directory of the DC Universe. Part of Who's Who in the DC Universe, the Loose Leaf Edition. A very proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Hi, John.
Hi, Maggie.
I'm still wrapping my brain around the fact that we're married.
Me too, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
Aw.
Oh, hey, I was looking at these old comics and I noticed that there's
Hold that thought. Why don't we talk about it on our podcast?
We have a podcast?
It seems like the logical next step. We get married, we change our names, we combine our comic collections, we start a podcast about comic books.
Well, I can't fault your logic, but there are plenty of podcasts out there already. Do you really think we'll have anything new and interesting to say?
Oh, I think we'll manage. Welcome to the Married with Comics podcast, where we constantly fuck up.
She goes from Marvel Girl to Phoenix to Marvel Girl to Jean Grey to Phoenix to Dead.
And then apparently he's so consumed with his own thoughts that he runs right past three monkeys. Yeah. In the alleyway, yep. A brainwave camera took a picture of that guy's head. Brainwave camera.
And Ben's just basically, whatever you gotta do to stop the commies, Nick.
So join us at the Married with Comics podcast. We're two newlyweds with a love for comics, intelligently, critically, and thoughtfully discuss comic books.
Also listen as we goof around, make jokes, and make fun of John for mispronouncing names.
I do that a lot.
Sometimes we'll pick a topic and review and discuss comics that relate to the topic.
And sometimes we'll pick up a comic and see what discussion topics come up. And sometimes we'll spend an entire episode talking about how much Maggie loves Batman.
The only thing that's almost as strong as my love for you is my love for Batman.
The Married with Comics podcast, available directly on our site at marriedwcomics.libsyn.com, on iTunes, and wherever good podcasts are found. Also, check us out at Facebook at the Married with Comics podcast.
We've got everything you need.
On the Who's Who podcast, being said by the irredeemable Shag.
For me, because, you know, she's a crazy, hot, raging woman, and now I can't not see that. But if you want more on her, check out the From Crisis to Crisis podcast. And also, someone, for the love of God, start a Will Payton blog, please. Just saying.
All right, Shag. You don't have to beg. Well, that could be nice. Anyways, here you go, Shag, just for you. Monthly, the Starman Adventure Hour. Wait a minute. I like Starman and all, but I don't know if I can talk for an entire hour about Will Payton. Huh, I know. I'll include another great 80s character I love, Mark Shaw Manhunter. The Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour. available monthly on iTunes and at starman-manhunter.headspeaks.com. Also part of the Headcast Network. Come join the fun. She's seen all the classics.
She knows every line. Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink. We are green from head to toe. Now we go back to the show.
Now for our second book this month, it's not going to be our normal Suicide Squad book. This month we're going to be looking at Manhunter number 14. Real quick, a little information at the top. I did cover this a couple of months ago over on my Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour podcast. I just covered this one issue. I briefly talked about Janus Directive. So if you listen to other podcasts, you may hear some similarities to this one. But again, I don't have a script for either one of them, so it may not be exactly the same. If you listen to both, you may get some different information from me. Who knows? Let's see. But let's start off the information that is the same. Again, this comes from Mike's Amazing World of Comics. This was on sale April the 11th, 1989. But the cover date was listed as June of 1989. The cover price was $1. The title of this issue is called Misdirection, written by Kim Yell and John Ostrander. The pencil was Doug Rice. Inker, Pablo Marcos. Letter, Albert Tobias de Guzman. Colorist was Juliana Freder. And the cover was done by our buddy Doug Rice. Well, I say our buddy. He's did a lot of the covers over there at Manhunter at this point. Edited by Barbara J. Kiesel. This was reprinted, yes, in the Suicide Squad, the Janus Directive trade paperback, which, as I said earlier, I actually have now. The synopsis, again, from Mike's Amazing World of Comics. Amanda Waller visits Mark Shaw's office and convinces him to help her find information about the Janus Directive. Manhunter then infiltrates the offices of Anaconda Industries, where he witnesses an experiment involving a microwave gun. When he is spotted, Mark Shaw is chased by a group of ninja assassins. They pursue him on a subway car and eventually believe they have killed him. But since this wasn't the last issue of Manhunter, apparently not. But let's find out. Now for my thoughts on this issue. So as I want to do, let's start with the cover. The cover shows Manhunter leaping down between, looks like a bunch of pipes. All over these pipes, we have the ninjas, the Black Adders, I believe they're called. Again, we have our trade dress as we normally do. Along the side says 6, the Janus Directive, part 6 of 11. Again, as I said just a little bit ago, this is the midway point. This is, again, 11-part series. So, we're a little midway over. It says Caught by Cobra, and the Cobra is written in the Cobra-type logo font, if you will. It's a good cover. I like this cover. Not the best cover ever, but it's very good. It shows what's going to happen. We get Mark fighting a bunch of the Black Adders. It's a very nice cover. Starting with the story itself, again, we get a big splash page of Mark in his Manhunter costume. Behind him, we get a giant lion's head. We get some dialogue as Mark's sitting there talking or thinking. In dialogue format, he talks about a dream he had, a recurring nightmare that is before a giant seal of the Manhunters, which is the lion's head. And the lion spoke to him and said, remove your mask. And when he tried to take his mask off, it was bonded to him. Something that... And he says, you want to put the mask on, it's his choice. Something that, I mean, you need to mention over my Manhunter podcast has come up over there, Starman Manhunter, that this dream actually does reverberate throughout the rest of the series on and off, that his brother, especially his brother at least, keeps mentioning how Manhunter's getting them in trouble and causing them problems. And how he can't give up on it. Now, reading this again for the second time in the last several months, this here he talks about how, you know, he can't take the mask off, how it's becoming part of him. It's actually fitting into the whole scheme of things a little bit more also. So maybe something I need to mention back over there in the next episode or two before I end talking about Manhunter. But that's another story entirely. We're talking about issue 14. So we get Mark. He's getting a package from his buddies over at Southern Cross Salvage Corporation. This is a talking about issues 10 through 12. When Mark went down there to help out Southern Cross Salvage Corporation after the invasion, they were trying to salvage some alien technology left behind. One of the guys I hired to go down and get some of the equipment for them absconded with it on their own and tried to sell it to the highest bidder, so they employed Mark to help them retrieve the technology. And since he helped them out, they sent him some gifts. A couple of issues in the series, they sent him a little kangaroo. This time they're sending a mini mask they can pop out. He calls it a mini mask. It's a stripped down version of his regular Manhunter mask that he can put in his pocket. That way, if he's out in town, he can pull the mini mask out and have his Manhunter abilities in quotes. So I think it's very nice. It's a nice thing he'll use on and off. And here at the bottom of page two, we get Amanda Waller squinting through the peephole. She knocks on his door and he's looking through the peephole and she's trying to look back at him. Oh, what a shock. Before I go through it. And I've talked about this before. While I love the artwork on this book, I think that Doug Rice does a great job on the book as far as the art. I don't care for the way it is Amanda here. She is, again, she's the right size, right proportion. She looks right. It's just, her face looks a little off. I don't know what it is. It kind of fits in this book. But Amanda's, I don't know. I say it fits in. It does not, I don't know. I mean, Mark's face looks fine, but Amanda, I don't know. I can't quite put my finger on it. Her face looks just a little off the way it's drawn. And I do like, yeah, she's telling how there was an attack on the Suicide Squad, on Bell Rev. She was, they tried to assassinate her. And again, we get a little note here that Amanda Waller is the head of Task Force X in the Suicide Squad. And it also references you to Suicide Squad number 28, which we've talked about here sometime in the recent past. Of course, you guys listen to the show probably know all this, because I talk about this all the time. But again, Amanda's basically trying to hire Mark to help them out. And as he says here, she wants to hire him to help out. And he's like, no. Look, Ms. Waller, I'm a bounty hunter, not an industrial spy. I survive because I calculate my risk and stack the odds as far as I can in my favor. I work in blind because I don't have the experience. The job's that important to a professional. Better for you, safer for me. Like I did. They're captured or dead. And like here on the bottom of page 4 where she's talking to him, Mark's giving a little soliloquy about how, yeah, it's not my job. Get someone else who can do it. As he's talking behind him, we get an outline of the Manhunter costume. I love when they do that. And then Mark, great selling point at Waller. The guys who knew what they were doing got killed. So you want me to do it? Forget it. He's like, yeah, I ain't forgetting nothing, mister. I forget how you called us up when you wanted a jet fighter, how you got my personal secretary to do research for your private jobs. You owe us, mister. Hey, and Amanda Waller is very used to getting her way. She bullies her way through. She pushes her way through. Mark's like, yeah, he's not taking it. He's standing up here. He's like, I won't be bullied. And she's like, look, we'll be with you all the way. Got a homing device in your baton, special frequency, will be on you quicker than spit. I don't need any help, because I'm not going to do it. I got no one else. Cold hard fact, I'd do it myself if I could. The Fate of Nation is writing on this. No lie, I'm scared to death, Shaw. I'm up against it, and I'm begging. And that's not something Amanda Waller, as you guys know, listening to the show, does very often is beg. She, as I said, she pushes her way through, she bullies, she's telling people how it's going to be. Begging's not her thing. So for her to beg Mark to help her, that means something. And Mark can tell because he sits there and pauses for me. He's like, where'd you see this corporation is? So, you know, I like how the fact that Amanda, you know, is honest with him. And he's like, hell, let's do it. And then our hero finds himself in Chicago. And I like he's on his motorcycle waiting. I don't know, just his glasses and his jacket looks kind of futuristic. He's got some big old glasses on. Like Oakley's from back in the day, kind of. And he talks about he's going to get a hold of Oracle. Oracle has shown over here in Suicide Squad. And Mark Shaw's been over here in Suicide Squad. So we know the connection there. And again, Oracle's been showing up over on his book. She's been helping him out here and there, giving him some information. And let me see here real quick. Another thing here, like I said, the next couple pages, Mark's just breaking down the cottage offices. Trying to find anything we can find out for Amanda. Again, like here, top of page 70, he uses a baton to leap from a building to building. very good use of his powers. He scrolls down this elevator shaft, and then he finds himself up above where some Cobra guys are working on a, not necessarily electromagnetic pulse, but it's a, kind of, it's a, what is he called? A stationary platform, microwaves. People get hit with a, people get hit with a concentrated burst of microwave energy. Cars lose all power. So it kind of is like a electromagnetic burst, except for it's a, I don't know, I guess that's what it is, basically. Computers would be erased, able to function. High enough doses of microwaves could destroy the human brain. So, I guess it is kind of like a, I don't know, huh, yeah, I guess so. I'm just thinking about that. So they built a model of a city. They've got a rat in there that fits into the building. They fire the blast at it. The rat's destroyed and the building's untouched. And again, it's a way that, I don't know if they do it in reality, but a lot of stories, you have the bad guys looking for ways to destroy people without destroying the buildings. Because, again, if you destroy the buildings, once you kill everybody, it's harder to move in. But if you have all your building and your infrastructure still standing, once you destroy the inhabitants, it's kind of easy to stroll in and take possession of everything. Again, as he says, there is going to be some damage. Unchecked fires. Then I can imagine, you know, cars causing accidents. So there will be some destruction, but it won't be a total, like in post-apocalyptic nightmare stories where the cities are destroyed. There'll be a few buildings here and there that's having some problems, I would think. But one of the scientists says that he's got other problems. They say, look upwards. And Mark said they must have figured he was in there since he got into the building. Again, a little fights. Mark lands on his ankle wrong, he says here. So again, he's got a hurt ankle. And he's got to fight his way free. He uses the baton to signal Waller and tells him that he's been discovered, that he needs the cavalry. And like this, he's using the baton to fly himself around because, again, his ankle's hurt, so he can't really put any weight on it. So I do like he's using his baton, the magnetic burst in there to fly him around. Come on, Wall. Nobody. There's nobody here. Blast you, Wall. Where's the freaking backup? So again, Amanda Waller said there's going to be backup for him if he needs it. But there is no backup. I mean, these ninja guys come flying out. These pretty cool jets. I'm just trying to probably, they got their arms. So it looks like their arms are strapped into it. I guess help them fly like wings. It's an interesting device. They got helmets on. And they got some jet packs. It sits up high on their back, on the shoulders. It's got some couple wings on the top, one or two wings on the bottom. It's an interesting design here. So as we talked about in the synopsis, I like the fight scene here with the Black Adders chasing Mark down. Mark's running on his motorcycle as he's being chased by these guys in these jet packs. And our time, Mark's like, where are you, Waller? Never car front, you need one. Heck, at a time like this, maybe find someone on the hot top side, because they went into some underground tunnels. They came back up to the top. Then he jumps on an elevated train. And Mark's going up the steps. He's like, I'll take the A train. And as the train comes pushing by, he's like, oh, great, it's the B station. So I don't know if the A and B is different directions or what's the difference between the A and the B train or station. Maybe you guys out there in podcast land that live in these New York and things knows what it's referring to. I'm in California. We don't have these elevated trains, so I'm not quite sure what the difference is between the A and the B station. So again, the Black Adders find Mark on top of the train. They start shooting at him. And again, here on page 19, one of them lands on top of Mark. There's a little fights. And they both go tumbling off. And one of the guys says, hey, look, one of them hit the third rail. Far on the tracks. And Manhunter stands up, and the guard that was there says, Manhunter, it's trying to escape. Manhunter jumps overboard, and they fill him full of lead. Well, lasers. And you can tell he gets hit in the head, it looks like, up on the back, the leg. Mark goes into the water. Well, Manhunter goes into the water. And they say, jump in the water and see if you can find him. One of the guys says, I saw half a dozen shots strike him, sir. There's no way he could have survived that. Literally want proof. We must act quickly. Look, police will be here shortly. And they come up, find his tunic full of holes and the mask. So again, they're saying, you know, there is no doubt the Manhunter's dead. And we'll find out more next month, hopefully. But at this point, Mark Shaw, the Manhunter, has been killed accordingly to this. Again, I do like here on page 21 where the Manhunter goes jumping off the bridge. And we get these gunshots flying into him, which is a very nice, very dramatic scene. I've got a podcast on the Manhunter, so you can tell I like this story, or this is the series. Again, this is about halfway through the run. A little over halfway, because it ends on issue 24, this is issue 14, so it's a little over halfway through the run. But again, it's a great series. I love the artwork in here. Other than Amanda's face at the beginning, I didn't care much for that. The rest of it, I enjoy the artwork. I think it's fantastic. I don't know why he had such a problem with her face. Everything else looks fine on it, just Amanda's face, for the most part. I like here on page 4, as I talked about, when she's talking to Mark, and she's got her head down, she's talking about how she sent the professionals, and they're dead. Again, that's a very nice shot of her face downturned, kind of like, oh, I sent some professionals, they're dead. Again, great book. I thought it was a great part of the Janus Directive. I'm glad they included Mark Shaw in here, especially seeing how he's tied up with the Suicide Squad. He's been in there before and helping him out. So, of course, Amanda would turn to him when she needs some, let's call it, outside help. But I guess that's all I got to say about Manhunter. Again, it's a little shorter, but not much to say about it. That'll do it for this time. Go ahead and join us next month when we resume our talks. Next month, we will be looking at the next part of the Janus Directive. It looks like, checking my list here, it looks like we'll be talking about Firestorm 86 and Suicide Squad 29. If things work out properly, things work out right like I plan on, we'd like to try to get a special guest in here for the Firestorm issue. Not holding my breath because he's a busy man, but we'll see. Otherwise, for more on the Manhunter, again, check out my Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour series, where we do talk about what happened to Manhunter after this. And as we continue on, we'll go from there. Also, check out my other shows. I have my Head Speaks podcast, where I'm in the middle of my Armageddon 2001 mega crossover. I'm getting special internet guests from across the internet. Try that again. I'm getting special podcast guests from across the internet to help me out cover the Armageddon 2001 crossover. Join me for my G.I. Joe, a Real American Hero, or I'm sorry, a Real American Headcast podcast, where me and a group of guests talk about the G.I. Joe comic book from the 80s. And the G.I. Joe cartoon. Having a great time on that. Great show, great guests. I love the book, I love the cartoon. Definitely check us out. And then I've got a fourth show somewhere. Oh yeah, Task Force X, what have you been listening to? Again, join us next month as we continue our Janus Directive look. But that'll do it for this month. Leave us some feedback over on Apple Podcasts or on the Facebook page. Twitter, look for Headcast Network. On the Twitter, leave me some feedback somewhere, send me some emails. You can email us at taskforcex@headspeaks.com. I'll read your emails on the air. I'm not getting a lot of feedback right now. I would like for that to change, but we'll see. Anyways, until next time,
squad mates, dismissed.
Thank you for listening to another great episode of Task Force X. I can also be found rambling on my main headcast of Head Speaks, where I rant and rave about movies, comics, geek stuff, and whatever is bugging me.
Mate, you just out crazy the Joker.
Well, I try, Boomer, but anyways, my home on the internet is at headspeaks.com. HEADSPEAKS.com. Links to my blog, which contain follow-up information to this and every Headcast, can be found there. Both Task Force X and Headspeaks are on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at headspeaks.com under Headcasts. Please feel free to email me any questions, comments, or concerns to taskforcex@headspeaks.com. And if you want to record a message, you can send it to me at taskforcex@headspeaks.com, and I'll play it on the air. I'm also on Facebook at Task Force X, and also on Google Plus, you can look for Task Force X under People and Pages. All titles and characters discussed are owned and copyrighted by DC Comics. I claim no ownership to the Suicide Squad, Checkmate, or Task Force X. I'm just a big fan wanting to spread the Task Force X love with everyone else. DC Comics can be found on the web at dccomics.com. Be sure to visit your local comic shop and look for Suicide Squad and Checkmate Comics. And while you're there, see what else they have that may interest you.
Mother.
Well, make sure you join us here next time for another fun-filled headcast from your friendly neighborhood, Brotherhead. In the meantime, I'll see you in the funny pages.
Yahtzee!